Network, proudly presents The Jay's Blade Show, with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into the show in style. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Clemmer, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JP's Best. It's the spiciest, the boldest, the most flavorful hot sauce out there on the market. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours, because when it says JP's, it's the best. Well, welcome to this Toastmasters show. We're so glad that everybody had a fantastic time over Masters weekend. It was really a terrific tournament to watch. And we're going to chime in right now with one of our dear old friends and our lead European correspondent, who will be able to tell us everything we need to know about not only Sergio Garcia, but the rest of the European side of the draw. Please give a warm Jay's Plays welcome back to our old friend Brian Kehoe of the Irish Sun and of the Irish Golf Desk. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thanks a lot, Jay.
It's always great to have you on, especially because your insights are so laser perfect on the European players. So why don't you give us your impression of this year's Masters?
Well, it was all about Sergio Garcia, wasn't it, winning at the, I think, the 19th time of asking around Augusta, where he said he'd never have a chance of winning. So that was obviously the big story for us, beating Justin Rose in that playoff. So, you know, finally, Sergio Garcia getting his major win, well, something we never thought we'd see.
You know, it's funny. I referred to it as a Pedro Martinez moment. Okay, when the Red Sox were making their run in 2004, down the stretch against the Yankees, they lost a pivotal game where they could have possibly won the division. And instead, the Yankees secured it. And the Yankees came back late and beat Pedro. And Pedro gave the weirdest interview ever when he said, "What can I say? I tip my cap and I call the Yankees my daddies." Now, obviously, something got lost in translation there. But you nailed it on the head when you refer to Sergio and that moment at the 2012 Masters when he said, "I don't think I'm ever going to win one of these." Do you think that maybe that moment of acceptance had two different impacts? That number one, it sort of allowed him to relax a little bit, and that might have helped him play better in the clutch. And two, do you think that that finally enamored him the most with the fans and the media?
Well, it certainly took a little bit of the pressure off him. I don't know if it enamored him more with the fans and the media. He certainly made more of an effort to be a little bit more amenable with the media. Although he was quite closed early in the week in the Masters. Some of my Spanish colleagues found him a little bit standoffish early in the week and wondered what was going on there. They were wondering who was going to win the Masters, because Sergio's played with so many winners in the first couple of rounds in recent years, and he was playing with our man Shane Lowry, and we thought after a great first round for Shane and that win that it might be him, but it turned out to be Sergio, with that great ball striking and some pretty good footing at times that got the job done. But I think, yeah, you're probably right, it did take a little bit of the pressure off him, but also the fact that he's now in a very serious relationship, you know, a married man with his fiancée, that's made a huge difference to him.
You know, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Sergio in the winner's circle at a major. He's still young enough to have an impact for the next 6, 7, 8, maybe more years. And when you win the Masters, you tend to play well there for a long period of time. And you sometimes tend to win it more than once, as did Jose Maria Olazabal and Sonny Ballesteros, his countrymen. do you see him picking up another major in the near future?
Yeah, I do. I think now that he's finally broken the back of the major hooter that have been hanging over him for so many years. I think he's really got a great chance. I think he'll be really looking forward to a course like Royal Birchill, which really suits a great ball striker like Sergio Garcia, and that's certainly an event that he'll be really looking forward to now in July. A big chance for him. He's been close in the Open before, and Royal Liverpool, where he famously wore that all yellow outfit, and of course against Padraig Harrington in Carnoustie in 2007, which was a very close call for losing in that four-hole playoff. So yeah, he's a player who loves Lynx golf, and I think now that the pressure's off and he's won that major, I think he'll be very dangerous. He put Rory McIlroy quite close at Royal Liverpool again a couple of years ago. So I think Sergio's future.
The other major venues also happen to fit him very well too, though. Erin Hills is a Lynx type of golf course, or in that sort of vein. There's a lot of fast and firm. There's not going to be a lot of rough. There'll be V-shaped chipping areas, so a short game wizard can do very well there. Like you said, Birkdale is an excellent choice for him to do well. And even though Quail Hollow isn't a Lynx, it's a course that the players know because they play it every single year on the regular PGA Tour. So all three of those courses are courses where, a great ball striker and a great shot maker and a great creative genius around the greens can play well. And Sergio seems to tick off all of those boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. Quail Hollow especially. I think if he can beat Rory McIlroy around Quail Hollow, I think he's the winner. Rory's just a great record around there, and has played since the recent changes. So, once you get one, the floodgates can open a little bit, and certainly, his nemesis Harrington, Padraig Harrington, showed that when he won in 07, winning, two more majors in the next year. So, maybe he's going to go on a Padraig run and win two or three in close succession. These things certainly tend to happen that way. It happened with McIlroy during his great run as well. So, I wouldn't be surprised as well, as you say, to see him have a good go. And, Erin Hills, Quail Hollow, two great courses. And, he's been a top player for a long, long time. And now that the pressure's off, perhaps he will have that extra little edge to go forward and get another one. Certainly, his career deserved a major championship, I think. And I think he wouldn't be surprised anybody to see him win two or three majors.
Now, let's take a moment to give our listeners a bit of inside information here. You are a fixture at every major. I'm a fixture at least two every year, sometimes three. I like to tell my fans and my listeners that Sergio has always been good to me. He's always answered all my questions. He's always had time to chat and give me an interview. What are your personal interactions with Sergio? You mentioned before that sometimes he would snap or snipe at the media, but, what were your personal experiences with him?
Well, mine have generally been reduced to asking for a reaction to something that Padraig Harrington has done to him over the years. So finishing second in Oakland Hills as well, or finishing 30 behind him in Oakland Hills in 2008. So, there's been a little bit of history between those two over the years, and that goes back a long way. Perhaps there's a bit of antipathy between Harrington and some of the Spanish players that inadvertently happened at a Seve Trophy way back in 2003. So that's been my reaction. There has been obviously Ryder Cups as well, and he can be testy in those if things haven't gone their way. I remember in 2008 in in Valhalla. I think he was one of those, you know, certainly staunchly defending all the decisions made by Nick Faldo, or certainly some of them, even though they seem to affect him. So, you know, it's coloured by times the reaction that you get.
Well, it's funny, you know, you know this because you were there when it happened. I've always had more trouble with Patrick than I have with Sergio. Okay, my Sergio stories are, Sergio was the very first interview that I ever did when I set foot at a major championship. He was the first person I bumped into at Pinehurst in 2005. And we were both dressed head to toe in black, so there was a bit of a bond there. You know, and he answered all of my questions and gave me good answers. And then you mentioned 2008 at Oakland Hills, when Sergio just got snake picked twice. Remember, he fell on the bottom of the cup with his second shot on 15, only to have the ball pop out, roll 10 feet away, and then he missed the putt. Two shot swing there. And then he hit a rock in the face of the grassy knoll on 16, and it flared back into the water. And when I threw him a softball question of what was he going to take positive from the experience, at first he snapped a little bit. He was like, nothing, I lost. But then when the interview was over, he came up to me and he said, Jay, I'm sorry about that. You know, he realized this sometimes in the heat of the moment. But you'll also remember me sitting at my desk the second day of, I think it was Southern Hills, and you and Dermot Galise and Carl McGinty come up to me and say, Patrick was looking for you. Do you remember that incident?
I do. I think you reminded him about his ball striking, or his fairway hitting regulation stat after a couple of rounds. It wasn't all that good, so he was living in his own little reality after a couple of rounds. So he didn't want to be reminded that he hadn't hit many fairways. So I think when he did a few on the final today, he went, and where's my little friend? When I need to talk to them about my stats. So, they don't like to, you know, they all have to, they have to make up their own reality, and they don't want to hear it, you know. So, it can be delicate talking to these guys sometimes.
To be exact, what happened was he missed six fairways the first day. But four out of the six times he hit the green, you remember at Southern Hills, all the talk was, oh, the rough. So what I asked him, I said, you know, how did you hit four greens out of the rough, you know, six times? And he looks at me and goes, what, are you the stats guy or something? Which is ironic because at the time I worked for the stats guy. I worked for Sal Johnson. And so the third day, I remember when you guys came up to me and mentioned it, and then I saw the interview on TV, the rest of the guys said, Jay, you got to make a point going to the next interview with Patrick, okay, and make sure you show up. Don't let him know that he owns you, okay? Don't ever let him think that way. And so sure enough, I sit there, and somebody asked a question that had some sort of stats relation, and he looks at me and goes, I don't know, ask my friend over here. And then with a big-ass grin, he looks at me and goes, hi.
Yeah, he'd be good that way. I mean, he's probably
good
fairways out of the greens out of the rough because he's a great judge of a lie in the rough. He makes a science out of judging the way the ball's going to react out of the rough. It's one of his things. But you know, like Sergio, they don't like to be reminded of any little negatives or anything like that. They try to live in their own little world and block out all that stuff. So questions that touch a nerve, they tend not to react as you might like.
So two more questions and we'll let you go. One of them has to be, though, the trivia contest question. Every guest gets a chance to win a bottle of hot sauce from our sponsor, JB's Best, and a t-shirt that says, I'm a hottie. So here comes your trivia question. Your topic is rock and roll music. What multicolored trap rock musician asks everyone to make his funk the P-Funk? What multicolored dreadlock musician asks everyone to make his funk the P-Funk?
Wow, multicolored dreadlock musician. I don't know. I mean, if it's not Bob Marley, I have no idea.
You weren't far off, actually. We were looking for George Clinton. George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. Does that ring a bell at all? Well, their famous song was Make My Folk. All right, so one last question before we let you go. Let's turn towards the U.S. Open. Obviously, Justin Rose's performance in the Masters gives him a bit of an advantage and a leg up as he's looking good and in good form heading into Erin Hills. Who else on the European side of the ledger should we be keeping our eyes on?
Yeah, well, I think you got to look at Rahm and John Peter, or Thomas Peters, John Rahm and Thomas Peters, two young Europeans who hit it a long way and can putt. So there's two guys that are certainly worth looking out for. I think Paul Casey has been playing consistently well for a while. You know, at Augusta, he's a guy that might do some damage. And obviously, you've got the usual suspects, obviously, in Rose and. You know, Rose and McIlroy certainly, yeah. And you know, they'd be the ones. You know, obviously, you know, we've already spoken about Sergio. So you know, I'd expect John Rahm and Thomas Peters certainly to give it a run. And then there's a lot of other young Europeans that have been shown some form over the last while. You know, Tyrell Hatton, who's a great young player, English player, has been playing well for a long time, so he might be able to spring a little surprise. And Matt Fitzpatrick, who's another super ball striker, doesn't do a huge amount wrong from tee to green, and you know, U.S. amateur champion as well, I think, in the past. So you know, there's a few.
What is the one thing that's been keeping Rory McIlroy from winning majors? What's the one thing that's sort of missing that, if he fixes that, we're going to see him hoisting trophies again?
Winning majors again? I don't think he's been that far off. Perhaps his putting has held him back a little bit, and he's been working on that, you know, with Phil Kenyon. So perhaps that's the thing. I mean, it kept him in the Masters after the first round this year. I think he shot a 72 on the first day when he could have shot a 77 or 78. So and then it possibly let him down. Then over the last couple of rounds, you know, he complained about his equipment and using the wrong golf ball in the wind and losing it quite a bit that way. So I think there's been a little bit of chat certainly about that, and he's been experimenting with his equipment over the last 4 months. So perhaps. Getting his equipment tied down exactly right the way he wanted, so there's no question marks there, perhaps would be one important element. And, you know, just having a little bit of luck with the putter. He hits it so well that he doesn't have to have a brilliant putting week to win a major. So, you know, he's always up there. He's never that far away. So I don't think there's that much wrong with Rory McIlroy, as he said himself when he was asked that after the final round of the Masters. Do you think there's anything missing, anything east? He says, no, I think I'm pretty good at this game at this stage. So perhaps the equipment thing, just get that totally nailed down, and a solid week with the putter, not a brilliant week, just a solid week, and I think you'd be right there.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show. We will see you in person in Wisconsin. Everybody, you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. I am Jay Flemma, and we will be right back after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.